I've been asked many times, what are your swing thoughts as you're swinging?
Well, I try to flat load my feet so I can snap load my power pack.
As long as my number two power accumulator doesn't break down, I can reach maximum lag and drag pressure through impact fix.
You see, the pivot is utilization of multiple centers.
Golf is geometrically oriented linear force.
And if you think of all this, hopefully you'll hit shots like this.
Welcome back to episode 2 of Full Swing Thoughts, a Friday golf podcast on the Netflix golf docuseries Full Swing. This is season 2 for us, season 2 for the show. I'm joined by Joseph LaMagna. Joseph, should we jump into episode 2? Are you feeling good about the show so far? Like overall, quick thoughts. Are you feeling good about where we're going? I think early in season 1, we were skeptical after the first, 80 minutes of footage. Where are you right now going into 2 episodes?
So far, I think it's worlds better than season 1. And I don't know if that's because I've adjusted my expectations a little bit to what it's trying to do, or if it's because it's just covering the stories in a way that I feel like is truer to what being a golf fan was like during that period of time. But I think it's a combination of the two. It feels better to me. I'm pretty excited about it. Where are you, Brendan?
Yeah, I am too. And maybe it's better for the sort of hardcore golf fan, or maybe the expectations were just higher, the hype was greater around season 1, and or we were just more skeptical, our guard was up a little bit about who's kind of bullshitting for the cameras, what story is being completely fabricated for the sake of a reality, sort of almost a reality TV show type storyline. But so far for me, it's been, I think, world's better, I think is the right term. So for this season, I guess, on the episode, on the podcast, we're coming up with made up awards. Sort of, we create these categories. I name it. You got to guess who I'm giving it to for each episode. We're kind of going as you watch. You know, if you plug it, you know, hit play after you've watched, you know, episode 2. We want you to guess along with us. Kind of, hopefully, you're not listening to these before you watch it. That'd be deranged behavior. So let's get into our awards for episode 2. Do you want to lead us off? Well, let me just set it up. Let me set it up too. This is largely Ricky Fowler, a big Ricky episode, a DJ episode, Paulina as much as DJ as well, an LACC episode, kind of starting, you know, it's a big Ricky part of it, right? We'll get later to the winner at LACC, but is that fair? Is that in the merger? I guess the merger.
Yeah,
the merger episode. And to be honest with you, I have the least amount of notes on the merger. I have some notes. This is obviously, the title is The Game Has Changed Part 2. Part 1 was episode 1, where it's like this tension. Part 2 is now the merger. That's still changed. It's changing. I don't have a lot of notes because I still, like, I did this for Year in Review at Shotgun Start. Like, I went back and it's like, God, this is all just a lot of like words and nothing. There was not a lot of like hard news. Is there some reaction and some quotes and we're shocked and surprised? But like when you do sort of the retrospective look back on it, there's not a lot there to highlight, discuss, amplify. Is that, do you feel me on that, or is that inaccurate? I just didn't get a lot from what we, looking back on that merger date. It shocked us, but there wasn't a lot.
I agree that I didn't take a whole lot away from it, but I think from Netflix's perspective, there are a lot of fans who are fans of the show maybe, but aren't covering or aren't following golf that closely. And so I think seeing like the players having no idea that deal was in the works and they were completely blindsided by it, like that's something that probably most people who are listening to this podcast knew, because we were on Twitter and we were taken aback that when players interviews saying that they had no idea it was coming. But if you don't follow golf that closely, I think seeing that was probably pretty interesting. I mean, even somebody as involved, Rory talks about in the first episode how close he is with Jay Monahan, him talking about being blindsided, feeling like a sacrificial lamb, how it's hypocritical of the tour. Like, I bet somebody who doesn't follow professional golf that closely got a lot out of that.
Yeah, that's definitely, I thought the footage was good. It was great. I guess there's just not a lot to learn when you look back in my research when I did that for the Year in Review, when in this kind of insight, there's not a lot to learn because there wasn't a lot there. It was a framework agreement. It was announcement with it. There wasn't more than what we knew and have come to know. And it's kind of been a moving target ever since then. You know what I mean? It's like the bombshell of that day becomes less and less as we sort of look back on it, because we don't know exactly what it was or what changed. That makes sense. It's just thin.
This is a little outside the Netflix show, I guess, Brendan, but the one question, and you brought this up, that I still think needs to get asked, is if, when they sat down, if both sides agreed to drop the litigation independent of what the framework agreement ended up being, then I still don't understand how they keep using this excuse that they were burning a lot of money on the lawsuits. If they had agreed that they were going to drop them either way, it still doesn't 100% make sense to me. That, and that's still never been answered for me, but that's not really, that's kind of outside the purview of this show.
There's a lot of things, yes. There's a lot of things that haven't been answered. There's a lot of lines that have been sort of remade, redone, shifted since then. I don't think we really know what motivated the deal entirely. If what motivated then is different than what they say now, it's been changed a million times, I feel like. And I don't think we learned much from that. But I do credit Netflix for being there with a lot of the players when it dropped. That the scene of JT, they must have been in South Florida.
Yep.
They watching live, I assume they didn't like stage it, live as Jay goes on CNBC. That was incredible. It was gripping. Now, did we get anything huge from it? No. But it was gripping that they were able to be there. That's kind of incredible, given how quickly it happened and suddenly and surprisingly it happened. That was a great scene, even if it wasn't too super substantive.
And again, this is more of what we've already been saying through two episodes, but I think the players were critical of the PGA Tour in some of those clips in a way that I felt like that was a little bit sanitized from season one. So this just feels like a refreshing step into like Rory saying, well, do whatever the fuck you want to do at this point.
Yeah, I'm
like,
done with it. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. It feels like a little bit of a tone change in a good way.
Yeah. Okay. Let's get to our awards. You want me to lead us off here with our first
How
category?
Many do you have?
I can do two. I'll do two. How many do you have?
I have two, but I mean, however many you have is fine. It does feel like a quiz. So it's kind of fun, but also a little stressful.
I'll start with a light one. Confirmation bias award. So just a feeling like vindication for any and all takes. Confirmation bias award from this episode.
Are you going to go with Dustin Johnson and saying that they took the risk to their reputations for leaving, therefore the PGA Tour guys should not be compensated? Is that the part?
No. Right character, wrong quote. I thought it was kind of incredible to hear DJ say, and I don't know if he like just unwittingly walked into this. This was after he came up short at the US Open. I didn't give it a full go. I maybe got a little lazy. I don't know what it was. So I'm going to grind a little harder to get it back to where it was when I was contending every week. I think for DJ to say, maybe I got a little lazy, is a pretty big bombshell sort of validation of a hot take that he went to live and sort of became, I don't know, not ceremonial, but he lost a little bit of his edge. And he got fat, rich, and happy for a little bit. That doesn't mean he's no longer good at golf. He won on live. That's not nothing. But is it the accomplishment of winning on the PGA Tour? And his major results went down? Anyways, I just thought it was really stunning to hear him say, I got lazy. Maybe I got lazy. I didn't give it a full go. What does that mean? It's the US Open. What are you talking about? I didn't give it a full go? Thought that was pretty big, good quote coming from DJ. Credit to him for saying it and Netflix for getting it.
Yeah. I thought where you're going with that is he saw Brooks win at the PGA and was taking that as like confirmation that he'd made the right decision and that after the merger happened, hey, see, I was right all along. That's where I thought you were going with it. I do think there will be a lot of people who take DJ's quote and say, see, like they did get a little lazy. So I'm with you on that. I also think there was a line from somebody in there talking about how since DJ's been gone on Liv, he's been crushing it. And I'm like, wait, what is that referred to?
Oh, like he's living his best life, maybe.
But there talking was a little about bit of but it was talking about crushing it, and it seemed to be suggesting on course. And I don't know what. I think it was Rappaport talking about how like some of these live guys have a little more pep in their step. DJ, since he's been gone, he's been crushing it. And I based on what he's won a couple times on live, but his major results are mixed at best since then. So that was a weird, that was kind of a weird take to me.
Yeah. I thought that was an incredible quote for DJ to say, because he doesn't give you a lot. And I think when you say the L word, I got lazy is a pretty big kind of fire alarm for me. What's your first award?
We went pretty different directions with these awards. Okay. Mine are, I think, a little more abstract. So I think they're harder for you to guess.
Sorry. All right.
That's no.
I've got a good one next. I've got a good abstract one next time. That's a free-flowing deal.
I like it.
Let it rip.
I have the how the hell did they let that happen award.
Oh, I know exactly what this is. The tee times, U.S. Open tee times, playing in the dark, last three holes. This was awesome. Another great get for the show.
Great, great footage.
You know, we heard Wyndham Clark kind of pop off that Saturday night to the press at the U.S. Open at the end of the third round. They went off at, I want to say, I should have looked it up, like 3:40 local time, maybe later. You know, it's the longest day, the days of the year, end of June, mid-June. And Wyndham was like, it was too dark. It sucked. We were playing in the dark. Ricky didn't say anything. We didn't really hear anything about that. We're like, wow, Wyndham is first U.S. Open. Yeah. And of course, this is a thing you're looking for at a U.S. Open. The media is just looking for crumbs for controversy about how the USGA might have screwed something up or stepped on themselves. And that was kind of it. This footage adds a ton of credence. And I'm not saying it like puts a cloud over the championship or negates anything, but like it was clearly like they made a bit of a mockery of the competition by doing this.
I mean, Ricky after the round is talking to somebody. He says, who's responsible for the tee times? Like, this was ridiculous. And he was like, I don't want to hear the marine layer excuse. We saw in the forecast that a marine layer was coming. Then you also see the scene with Rory, where Rory's walking through the gym talking to Ricky, and Rory's like, you know, saw the 3.5-footer. That was all the light. Like, Brennan, in this footage, there's the cliche that it's darker than it's actually darker on the course than it looks on TV, but it was really dark looking at some of these shots. Like, the scoreboards were legitimately lighting up the golf course, and Ricky's having to lag putt on 18. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah, this was great. This was really, really good stuff for like the hardcore golf person, again, who was watching this, recalls it, remembers it, probably didn't have as much like color like this with Ricky. Ricky clearly charged to some like USGA office in that scene, like walked up, probably a little bit hot, like who's in charge of tee time? So it looked like USGA officials that he was talking to. And Rory saying, you know, I couldn't see anything. The last three holes, 16, 17, 18, right? I mean, and the putting was the big deal. They have a great scene of that lip out with Ricky. He's lifting in the gym, in like the mobile gym. And he's like, it's right in front of his face. And it's Sunday of a major. And he's trying to work out and get his head off it. And it's like, I don't know if he sees it. It's hard not to. And that's what you've been sleeping on all night. I was like, that is picture tells 1,000 words. And it's within that context of telling the story about darkness, really sort of making a mockery of that finish on Saturday night. So,
like, golfers complain about everything, right? This is one where, like, if I know I'd be incensed if I were that player. Like, Ricky has every right to be pissed. Wyndham Clark was pissed. Rory seems to be upset. And those aren't golfers that throw tantrums at everything. Like, this actually was pretty ridiculous.
Right. And you have, like, it carries more weight almost because they're just kind of like talking to each other, right? They're not like shouting about it on the next tee box in the heat of the moment. They're like talking about it to each other the next day and not for public consumption. They're like pulling their punches because they're probably behind the scenes. They know Netflix is there, of course, but it adds more weight to how bad it must have been. So,
and you still have a day ahead of you, so you're not trying to lose your cool. So, like, it was really bothering Ricky, and for good reason.
Yeah. All right, my next award. My next award. The Poodle, Not a Pit Bull award. Poodle, I'm a poodle, not a pit bull award. What do you think that might be?
Can you give me a little more? Are we going, like, this is on the golf course?
Sort of like, yes, comments that sort of give you a state of mind, frame of mind, an approach. This is a poodle, not a pit bull.
Ricky?
Yeah.
All right. I mean, definitely talking Rick. About like being super disappointed, but then as soon as he like holds his daughter, everything's okay. Like, and putting some of the defeat in perspective. I mean, where exactly were you going with that?
No, this was, and I feel so, Ricky had so much in this that I found so endearing and like probably healthy perspective and probably lives his life like in a really good balance. But this was another instance of Netflix, and we talked about it in episode one, just doing the savage sort of not so subtle transition from one to the next. And it's at the very end, and like, God, Ricky gets his win. This is amazing. It's been whatever, it's 5 years. Yeah, so it closes with, he loses at US Open. They kind of then do a quick tie up at the end of, he gets his win at Detroit. It's been whatever it was, 4 years, 5 years, and it's just this triumphant moment. The music's really emotional, and he looks to the sky, and it's great. And they go to Butch Harmon. Butch, by the way, earlier in the episode, Butch is good in this. He's pretty good. He says he could see the anxiety in Ricky off the first tee shot at LACC when he missed the fairway. Like, I can see it that shows up, and I can see the anxiety in his swings. And the anxiety on his face. So Ricky then wins at Detroit a couple weeks later. And Butch throws the gauntlet down. It's this like lovey-dovey scene. Ricky's staring at the sky. He's hugging his daughter. He goes, no, we move on to the next. Now we got to go win more. For him to validate his career, he's got to win majors. There's got to be some majors on that resume. That is a pretty big weight to throw on top of this. Ricky, when now he is whatever, 30 plus, he doesn't necessarily have the skill set that rewards the best golfer right, best golfers right now, right? All these young guys who come up. Like, you could say that about Ricky at 25. Like, the odds are Ricky is not going to win a major. I don't know. That was a heavy thing to throw down. He's got to win majors to validate his resume. He has to. He's just got to do it to validate his career. Netflix then jumps to the close off the episode. And here's Ricky after winning Detroit. Just because everything I've been through and how long it had been, all these last few years and all the work, I kind of get to exhale and take a deep breath. That is the opposite of Butch saying, move on. We're on to the next. We got to win majors. This ain't shit. That's like a Tiger type thing. And then they jump to Ricky saying, I get to exhale and take a deep breath. What? You're in the middle of the summer. You're in the middle of your 30s. There's no exhale, bro. You're like, I'm not saying that Ricky is out of line for saying this, but it was a pretty big contrast. And I don't know. I assume they intentionally did it with Butch stacked on top of Ricky talking about exhaling while Butch says, go, go, go. There's an interesting, like, man, just let him have his win in Detroit without trying to make him look like he's, you know, he doesn't have a killer instinct. And that it really did, for me, draw that out. Poodle, not a pit bull.
No. I like it. It's a good point. I mean, I think you'd rather hear a golfer, if you want a golfer to win a major, I think you'd rather them win in Detroit and say, like, that was awesome, but I'm really frustrated I didn't get it done in LA. And like, we're on to the next one. But yeah, I mean, it is insightful. Some of these golfers, they're telling you where their minds are in these scenes, both last season and the season. So I like it.
Yep. What's your next one you got for me?
I mean, these are just, we're on different speeds right now, but I have the friend or family member of a PGA Tour player I would not want to fight at a bar.
Friend or family member. God, who is in this?
There's somebody who made an appearance in this episode that I'm not sure I'd ever seen before and would want no piece of him at a bar.
I mean, it's not AJ, Austin Johnson.
Rod Fowler.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is Rod Fowler somebody you're familiar with?
I mean, I know what he looks like and who he was as soon as he came on camera. He looks like a Rod. He looks like a Rod. Looks like he was a 1970s fullback in the NFL. Like, he's got like the squat little look to him. Yeah, Rod Fowler. You wouldn't want to mess
I don't really remember him being on camera that much during Ricky's good years either. Like, is that?
Yeah, he's not on a lot. It's not like a Mike Thomas situation or anything. Like, I don't think he goes to a ton of events. So, but yeah, they're talking in the locker room, right? They're kind of chatting. Yeah. Yeah, he shows up.
Big dude.
That's a good one. He's big.
That's what I'm saying. You're doing smoothest transition. I'm going for random. We're just on different wavelengths.
No, I mean, I want this sort of inane and sort of the goofy parts of it, too. I just, you know, the Ricky thing crushed me. And it felt like a big thing, a big part of this episode is showing mindset, frame of mind, exhale, take a deep breath. So that's a good one, Rod. Let's just do a little bit more Ricky notes. You know, he says, I don't play for money. I'm pretty sure they filmed Ricky for season one. And he just wasn't a relevant enough player. I think they wanted to, you could tell, I think they used some of that footage for this because he has really long hair in parts of it. And then he's got the short hair from 2023 and other parts of it. There's the scene when they're out on the pool deck and Allison's talking to him about, like, you played like crap at one Masters and you texted me like, how are you doing? And again, it felt pretty sort of illustrative of who Ricky is as a person, some of the balance, but kind of a powerful scene. That seemed like it was probably maybe from the prior season because of the hairstyle changing, but I could be wrong. I don't know. It was just interesting. Season one, he was a backup character. He was narrating like the gaps on who Justin Thomas is and who Jordan is. And like, he wasn't a character. So I thought it was good to have him because he's been a big part of the PGA Tour here this last decade or so. It also felt like we don't really know much about Ricky, the person, at all. He doesn't give us much. And I think for after this, like, there maybe isn't maybe not much to know, right? He might just be like a pretty normal dude. Like, he's portrayed as this edgy sort of cat doing like dirt bike flips. And he does maybe that, but he might be a pretty basic, simple dude in a good way. And so we don't really know much. He seems like, I thought it was interesting to hear from his wife about who he, like what he texts about, what maybe his thought process is when he gets off the golf course. He seems great at keeping golf at the golf course, to use a cliche. That's probably how he got through this stretch of his career, being super famous and not being particularly good at golf during that stretch, and having expectations of fame, but not really his golf game. So, and Allison, even at one point goes, sometimes I forget, like, he's good when he shot that 63 in the opening round of the LACC.
I thought, Brendan, she might have been saying, like, he's good in terms of, like, he's got it all, like, he's got it together. Did you take it as she was saying, sometimes I forget he's good at golf? Like, I didn't take it that way.
I wasn't. Yeah, I think people will like overhype that. It was like, no, he's got it. Like, he's actually like incredible at this. And we just like don't think about that enough.
And mentally, really too. Like, yes, he's there.
He's got it. He's got it sorted. Yeah. And
I agree with you, Brendan, to just drift off you a little bit. I thought the scene where they're outside talking and his wife Allison is talking about how Ricky texted her, how are you, despite Ricky having a bad day, and then how she would talk somebody's ear off on a plane if she were having a bad day. And then it kind of cuts to Ricky and he's talking about how he doesn't really let on about that kind of stuff and he kind of keeps it bottled up, it seems like. I thought that was like one of the most insightful looks into Ricky that I've ever had. And I don't know if that's because we just haven't gotten that much out of him, like you're saying, but I could have seen Ricky being the total opposite way, where he's very open and like has these deep conversations with people. Like, just cause I know nothing about Ricky Fowler, really, I could have seen it going either way. So I thought it was pretty, pretty insightful about a famous player.
Yeah, he's not a robot. Like, we've seen him get emotional. He was emotional at Valhalla when he lost. He was emotional at Phoenix when he lost that one time. His grandpa was there or something. He was emotional in this one in Detroit when he finally does win. But I don't think that was footage we got. I just think he's got, like, a really good, healthy perspective. And maybe it's too healthy to be a killer golfer, an all legendary golfer. And, like, maybe you can't be healthy. Like, maybe Tiger, we know, probably didn't have a great perspective on that balance, at least. And one more on that. He's like, you're pissed off and bummed. And then you see Maya, his daughter, and you're like, okay. And again, Netflix did that with Rory coming in the locker room, like throwing a water bottle down and saying, to blurting out the F word. Not that Rory's probably pretty imbalanced too, but again, that's Netflix doing the contrast. So those are our awards. You got any others? Should we unload the notebook for episode two?
Just have those. We can unload the notebook.
Let it rip. More DJ stuff. Just, he says, we knew what we were signing up for when we went to live, but I don't think they did with the OWGR. I think, like, everything else, like that seems to have been a rug that was pulled out from under them based on everything we hear. Like, they thought they were getting OWGR points, but DJ seems perfectly contented with his decision. And Paulina does too. I had to take a back seat, but now it feels like we're in the front of the plane together. Whatever that means necessarily, it just seems like they've got more time together. I don't know, but DJ seems quite happy with his decision either way. And Claude Harmon III, one more button up of Claude Harmon III. He said Brooks's win at the PGA was the changing factor to merge. Could it have had a...
I don't know what he's basing that off of.
There's lawsuits and there's legal bills and there's just a bigger picture than one major championship win or not win, in my opinion. Could it have hastened something? Maybe, but as we know, the sort of plans were already in motion before the PGA Championship. So what's another note you got?
I mean, I thought it was interesting. So we haven't talked a lot on this pod so far about the merger, and I thought it was interesting getting a look into the PGA Tour HQ after mm-hmm. the merger was announced, and I had to look up, like, so they show the Zoom call or whatever, the conference call. Look up who are these people who are on this call. And invariably you get to some PR firm that
Bully Pulpit. Pulpit. It's a DC like lobbying PR firm.
And then like the comms from the PGA Tour. I did the same thing.
I paused it, zoomed in on the Zoom. Who's the names of these people on the Zoom? Hopefully everybody does that for episode one on Rory's dashboard and what podcast he listens to. Zoom in, see what he's listening to, and investigate that further and subscribe. But yes, I did the same thing. What else from the meeting room that you like? The footage.
I just thought it was funny. Like, Jay Monahan says something like very vanilla, per usual, and Laura Neal of comms is like, well, that makes sense because there will be a positive outcome. And it's like the least convincing tone ever, where it's like just non-statements. Oh, that makes sense because there will be a positive outcome. Like, what is there to say? I had that as a note, just not inspiring. And then the other big note I have from that call is Jay saying, I think what will be the uncomfortable thing is going to be fighting my tendency to want to answer questions when he's talking about having to address the players.
To the players.
And I was like,
yeah,
those are big words from somebody who never answers questions, like is never to be found, is more hidden than like any other figure involved. It's always been the players who are having to speak on his behalf, and he's going to have to fight a tendency to answer questions too much. Like, big words from somebody who doesn't like to answer questions.
There was nothing to answer. Like, there were no details. I guess he could have let more on than he did, but I thought a good one, like you said, God, when those Netflix cameras go, like, think about a room that immediately is going to change their tenor and be incredibly wooden and stiff and just not give you, it's like comms, of course. Like, I loved getting the footage from the other side of the moat, one of the 180 meeting rooms or whatever they have in the global home. Great line from Jay. I'm inspired and highly motivated to reach that outcome, is what he said, the positive. I'm inspired and highly motivated. And I don't doubt that, but A week later, he was gone. He was on leave of absence for like justifiable reasons, health reasons. Like he clearly, like there were points in this episode he didn't look super healthy. Like was he really highly motivated? Like, you know, was he inspired? It seemed worn down. Like, and I'm not like judging him, critiquing him for that, but you know, it was like that quote based on what happened then, like a week later, doesn't necessarily mesh. What else you got from the notes?
That's about it from the meeting room. I mean, it just was overall like not the most inspiring. And yeah, like you said, they know the Netflix cameras are in there, so that's always background music. I have the Azinger line at the US Open talking about, we all knew Ricky was doing really well with the commercials and the whole nine yards, and then his game started going downwards, which is just the most Paul Azinger quote ever. It was cliche. Good to hear him in my ear again.
There's some good Azinger quotes coming later too. Other episodes. Go ahead.
I have like it was interesting to see where people are sitting inside the Monahan speaking to the players room. Like it looked like it was Tyrrell Hatton sitting with Shane Lowry sitting with Rory, which was kind of an interesting configuration. Yeah. And then on the other side of the room, you get Wesley Bryan sitting with Richie Werenski and Grayson Murray. And you can kind of see that story where Rory apparently yells play better over at Grayson, and just kind of seeing how that all took place, what that room looked like. I was entertained by that.
Yep. Yep. It was good. I just like, again, like I said, I didn't get a ton of info, but it was good that they got all those players, like, what is it? Damon in a Waffle House or something. And
yep.
JT clearly stunned. Like, I love JT's quotes in episode one. I like the mirror. He's like, what the F? Like, he's just letting it rip. There's no politician in him. He's cursing. Not that like that adds some sort of genuineness to it, but it helps like kind of understand like where he's at in that moment. Another note, I thought telling the US Open through Ricky Lenz was a good idea, but what we talked about in last episode, it just negates the Rory narrative they just hammered so hard in that first episode. Like he couldn't find his game because he was leading the PGA Tour in these times of battle. And so we get nothing on Rory playing arguably like his best golf tournament in a really long time. It was either that or the Open that have been two of his best majors in a decade. And this is a massive, like it is the most massive story around Rory. I think it's as interesting as the leadership role is that he's gone 10 years without a major. Like he's the best player in the game over that stretch. Maybe, probably he doesn't have a major. And like, I thought them telling US Open through the Ricky Lenz was right, but like we get another US Open storyline in the next episode. And there's just like, I don't know, for me, Rory that week was maybe the most interesting player. And it just didn't jive with their storyline about how he was flailing about because he had this leadership role crown he was wearing. I don't know. So,
I'll only push back a little bit in that I think the fickle nature of golf is hard to communicate to a fan. Like somebody can be struggling with their game and then show up and play really well in the US Open. Rory legitimately was battling his swing and felt like he needed to do a full reboot and talked about that last year at that time. And when he stepped down from the pack, like I remember a lot of people who are saying that's good. Like he was distracted. I don't think Netflix is necessarily telling it in a disingenuous way or in a way that's hypocritical because he played well at the US Open. I do think there was a little bit of a, like it didn't, I don't think it over dramatized the negative state of his game. Do you? I mean, I felt like it was truthful to Rory's season.
Yeah. I just think they were like blaming for it was a little overplayed, right? Because he's been very good a golfer too, while he was in a leadership role and doing this live battle. And it just felt like, maybe that's just me as like the golf fan. I wanted to see more of the Rory story at LACC than anything else. Just about anything else this past year. Cause that was like a kick in the nuts for him, like a huge kick in the nuts.
That's true. It is similar to some of the stuff we've said last year. Like how is Cam Smith not a bigger part of this episode? Like Rory, if there's no part of this full season that gets into his US Open, run, like that was his best shot at a major last year.
Yeah. Yeah. Another note, it's like the perfect description for LA, in my opinion, that made me laugh. Was Paulina and DJ driving. Paulina goes, "I miss LA." DJ responds, "I like it for a little while." Yeah. Like, LA is amazing, right? It's so good. It's so fun to visit. And then you're like, ah, maybe I should move on. The traffic's killing me now. Maybe some people love it, but "I like it for a little while" was just such a good DJ. Like, nah, not for me, but I do. It's my scene for a week. It's
very DJ, right? Weekend. I mean, that.
Yeah. Funny quote. What else you got? Anything else in your notes?
Nothing huge. I mean, I thought it was interesting watching DJ and Rory interact in the locker room.
Got that.
At the US Open. And
good scene.
Talking through the golf course a little bit, and then DJ being pretty heaping a lot of praise on the golf course, and then kind of caveating it with, like, there are a couple interesting holes, which I thought was interesting. It did seem like he maybe took exception to some of the holes out there, and knowing the reaction LACC got, largely praise from like Friday Golf and myself included. I thought it was amazing, but then some of the players not loving it. It was kind of interesting to maybe see where DJ landed on some of that.
Yep. In that locker room scene, I was amused by Rory not being able to get his hat fitted just right. Like, it takes struggling to get his hat strapped. Like, it's like the most relatable thing. Like, why does Nike not have that completely dialed? Like, it just seemed like he was battling to get his hat strap on the right size. It took too long to do that. Did you think this was a big quote? "Why did I waste 12 months of my life to fight for something that was always going to come back together again?" Which is Rory said about the merger when he's driving the car, like, do whatever.
Not really.
Does that mean he regrets it? Is that a big bombshell? That didn't feel like it to me. I put it in the notes section.
I mean, I remember him saying that he felt like a sacrificial lamb at a press conference, which is also shown on the Netflix episode. So this didn't catch me off guard at all.
The weirdest moment for me was some fan on the LACC ropes telling DJ, "It's a lifelong dream to see you play, bro." Like, lifelong? Like, DJ, like, guys, if a guy's 15 years old, what do you mean? DJ's only been a pro. Like, how long have you been alive? The guy was like 40 years old. He's been wanting to see DJ play his entire life. Appreciate it, man. It's the weirdest thing ever.
Also, knowing like how hard it was to get to LACC, I don't know who this fan is, but if it was a lifelong dream to get to see DJ, this was not the easiest place to see him. You'd think you could have made that happen by now.
Yeah, you could have gone.
It's like a 40-year-old. It looked like a 40-year-old guy who, I don't know what his financial situation is, but he was in LA at the US Open, which was hard to get tickets to. He couldn't have made it at some point to some random PGA Tour stop.
Yeah, that was one other thing they did at LA. Netflix made it seem like that was a big party. That's next episode. I'm not going to jump. Not jumping ahead. I think that does it. I've got enough notes. Anything else you want to throw out there before we wrap?
No, it was really refreshing to see some LACC footage and kind of reminded me how sweet that golf course was.
I had some good drone footage and it just like just not seeing something that was like verdant green, right? It was just interesting. That's a United States course, like America. Like, we don't see that enough. So, all right, that's it for episode 2. We will be back with episode 3. Rate, review, subscribe, send us tweets, send us, you know, critiques, feedback, positive, good, bad, emails, whatever you want. We are just trying to make this more enjoyable, more insightful. We definitely want to have a conversation with you around it. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it in Club TFE, some of the weekend chats and some of the kind of tour guide posts we get up there, comment section there. If you want to join Club TFE, big bang for your buck, $120 a year. But we appreciate your continued support. We will be back and cover episode 3 of Full Swing.